ser ético, isto é uma crença.
É uma religião muito grande.
A visão é um culto. É coragem, que é liberdade, que é crer, que é vontade, que é o caráter das pessoas.
Calma de quem é grande, maior que os maiores.
É uma paixão com outra explicação.
Eu não consigo explicar o que é ser do Benfica. Eu sinto o que é ser do Benfica.
Mas de facto uma paixão. E as paixões são assim, vivem-se assim intensamente.
Aqui não há nenhuma razão. É paixão, paixão, paixão.
Ser Benfica.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Talking to the Doll Benfica podcast, episode number 311. But without further ado, let's get into the derby Benfica played Sporting at the Alvalade for the league this past Sunday, and it was quite an event, right? So I remember us last week, Dave, here me saying that I was very confident ahead of this game. I think you said that you were cautiously optimistic.
Then I think I quickly changed that because I used that against Porto and going into the match, seeing how Sporting was playing. I think I should have been a little bit more than cautiously optimistic. I called a 3-1 scoreline, so it was closer to 3-1. It was looking like it was going to be 3-1, but yeah, ended up being somewhat like that.
Calling a 3-1 scoreline is not cautiously optimistic.
Yes, that's for sure.
That's very optimistic. And Dave, I got to be honest with you. When I watch these games, when I watch Benfica games, I always take notes for the podcast. And for the first time, I think I have two goals that I jotted down, and I had to cross them over because VAR decisions call them back. Looking at these VAR decisions, and I think that you probably remember them, absolutely the right ones.
With the João Felix being called the foul before the goal, correct?
Yeah.
Kind of harsh, just on a selfish level, just because of how amazing of a goal that would have been for João Felix outside of the box and just his talent, man. It's going to be really hard for us to hold on to him. I really hope that we can keep him on for at least another season going past this one, because this kid is just oozing talent from the seams. And I just hope that we can keep him at least for another season.
I very much
can't complain about the foul on that one, but like I said, it just hurts because that goal was something special.
Yeah, and while sometimes the VAR goes offline when there's games at the Dragão or whatever, this VAR was very much online, and I think that every time that the VAR got called in this game, it was the correct decision. But Benfica would finally get their second goal in the 36th minute. Again, João Felix getting that goal, streaking in the middle of the two center backs, and I believe it was Seferovic that found him, or Pizzi found him in between the two center backs. I don't recall now, but he put it away quite nicely. So Sporting would end up getting one back in the 43rd minute. We go into the locker room 2-1. But Dave, you look at this game, and after the watching the first half, you got to think to yourself that Benfica is in complete control of this game, and surely after they come back from the locker room, there'll be more goals.
Yeah, for sure. And once again, we've been saying this on podcasts for the last couple of weeks now. The score line does not do any justice of how dominating this team is playing on the pitch. It was 2-1 at halftime, but it once again could have been a lot worse for Sporting. Even with a 4-2 scoreline, makes it seem that Sporting was somewhat in the game, but Sporting was nowhere to be seen at all in this game.
Yeah, and look, I got to be honest. And we've talked about this now for the past couple of weeks and the change that we see, but it's almost, and maybe I'm conditioned still by the Benfica's under Rui Vitória, right? Where we really couldn't play out of the back. Every time a team pressured us up front in our third, in our defensive third, we had an issue getting the ball out. We would resort to the long ball or the bombo, as many people have nicknamed that type of a game. But now it's like night and day. Benfica is super confident playing out of the back, to the point that it's almost nerve-wracking to watch him. And maybe, like I said, maybe I'm conditioned by what I had seen in the past and think that this team clearly has limitations to come out of the back and play. But the truth of the matter is that these players don't stop knowing how to play. And if they have the technical ability that they have, why not play out of the back? And when you have a lot of the dynamics and players moving into passing lanes and players playing in a supportive manner, it's a lot easier to play out of the back. And this is one of the things that Tolage has brought to this Benfica team, is the fact that the team plays supported football. So if a guy has the ball, there's always a couple options that he could turn to. And there aren't always balls that you're going to force down between two guys. They're always easy passes and easy to read and easy to see. And this is one of the things that Laje has brought to this team, as I mentioned. So to watch Benfica play out of the back, it's a delight. But at the same time, I'm a little bit nervous. Samaris was caught in possession a couple times, missed a couple passes, gave a lot of turnovers. But overall, I thought that Benfica's defensive transition, and something that has already been mentioned by Bruno Lage, was impeccable and has been very good, to the point that every time Benfica loses a ball, the team balances themselves out very well into the defensive transition. I haven't seen a dominating performance from Benfica like that against Sporting in a very, very long time. And it was good to see. And you really, at the end of this game, Dave, you just feel that there should have been a lot more goals than just a four.
Yeah, for sure. And what I was talking to you before we started here, biggest takeaway for me was how we put up with Vitória's style of play for so long. This was such a breath of fresh air that this was Benfica dominating another big club in Portugal, and we weren't seeing your typical old Vitória style, where it would be a 0-0 or even worse, us losing matches, but putting a dominant side on the pitch here against Sporting was a breath of fresh air. And I just can't believe that we stuck behind Vitória for so long, and I hope it doesn't come to bite us in the ass at the end of the season. But it's so great to see how well this team is responding to Bruno Lage now.
Look, it was very easy to see, right? If you know anything about football, and look, I understand the guys that they kind of grin and bear it, right? Because as long as Benfica was winning, all was good. But at the point that Benfica started losing, then that's when people started kind of turning or turning their story, really, or changing their story. But I mean, for you guys that are longtime listeners of the podcast, I think from the very first year Rui Vitória came along, Cristiano and Steve were very big critics. Steve, right off the bat, was a big critic of things that he saw that he didn't like with this Rui Vitória team. Cristiano and I kind of hung in there for a little bit with the wins, but Cristiano was very vocal also about saying that Rui Vitória didn't really have a style or a coaching ability to take this team to the next level. And look, I know that everybody is ecstatic with what Bruno Lage has been able to do so far. I am happy that we had the coaching change. I am not euphoric, if you will, at this point. I don't think anybody should be euphoric at this point. We have reduced the gap that we had to Porto. But look, to me, this is perfectly normal. To me, this is what I expect from Benfica. This is what I expect from a team with this level of talent, with this level of depth. We have the deepest team in the Liga NOS and probably one of the best and most talented team when you look at both starting 11 and also the 18 guys that get selected for every game. We have probably the best talent all around in the Liga NOS, with perhaps an exception of one or two positions where the other guys are better players. But this is the team that normally, under normal circumstances like these, they should be performing in the same manner as this one. So I'm not euphoric because this is what I expect from this team, a team that has this level and this caliber. And Seferovic and Jean-Felix, hot.
Yeah, they just keep on scoring. Now, Seferovic is scoring a goal every 87 minutes he's averaging, and Jean-Felix is bringing that number down. He's now scoring a goal every 95 minutes. So these guys keep getting their time to shine, and they keep on producing. So good to see them bagging them in. And you know what? Like we discussed as well, they could have easily, I know Jean-Felix missed a huge opportunity there in the middle of the second half for his brace, or it would have been his brace. And they keep on missing good chances here and there, but, you know, they also are still producing.
Benfica didn't really bring anyone in, per se, as far as they did promote four kids from the B team. So Zlobin, Francisco Ferro, Florentino, Jota were the players that came up from the B team. And look, I know that there's a lot of guys out there that they were upset that Benfica didn't do anything as far as moves, as far as shoring up some of the weaker positions, per se. Right back comes to mind. Perhaps center back also comes to mind with the exit of Lema. So there was a lot of folks unhappy because Benfica didn't make any moves. But if there's a guy, and I think I might have written this on Twitter, if there's a guy that knows what players that are available on the B team, what kind of characteristics they have, what kind of roles they could play, what kind of talent they could bring to this A team, is Bruno Lage, right? Because he pretty much spent half the season, plus the preseason, with a lot of these players. These four players are all players that played under Bruno Lage, that were staples in Bruno Lage's starting 11s for the B team, which plays a very attractive style of football. And these are guys that that Bruno Lage trusts. Done with that, we turn our attention out to Nacional. And, I can't mention Nacional's name without getting a little chuckle after what happened this past weekend. So Benfica played Nacional this past Sunday. This was this escalated pretty quick. Inside 1 minute, Grimaldo was getting a 1-0, and then after that, the goals just kept rolling, and there was tons of wasted opportunities, Dave. And I didn't watch this game live, but I did watch it yesterday, and I just couldn't believe it, Dave. Yeah. You watched it live. What were your feelings?
Yeah, so 35 seconds in, and Grimaldo already scores. And I was thinking, in first half, we did have a lot of wasted opportunities. It could have been, again, 5-0 at the end of the first half. And I was sitting there thinking, oh, it's going to be another podcast where we talk about wasted opportunities. But at the end of the day, when you have a 10-0 scoreline, we can't really complain about wasted opportunities, because it's not every day that the Benfica scores 10 goals in the Portuguese league, not since I believe 1964, they hadn't won 10-0. So we had wasted opportunities in the first half, but then scored 7 in the second half. And it was just complete domination. And you know what? I'm not going to be opposed to a 10-0 scoreline. I know there's some fans out there, and maybe some fans of the other teams, that are saying, oh, we should have taken it easy. But you know what? Benfica deserve this, and the Benfica fans deserve this after what we've been through the last couple of years with Vitória and the boring style. We watched game in and game out. This 10-0 victory was a great result, and it was a present for us. But I do want to mention something, because up here in Canada, there's a hockey analyst, Don Cherry, who, whenever Canada beats these smaller countries in hockey, let's say 10-0, he always makes reference to the hockey gods, and the hockey gods will find their way to humble you after running up the score like that. So I hope the soccer or football gods don't plan to humble us anytime soon, and we just appreciate that 10-0 victory.
Yeah, look, there's definitely a mixed of reactions by some folks, and I'm not going to say, I think the majority of them are non-Benfiquistas, of course, as there's always something that they need to nitpick. There was a Simões actually came out and he said some words, and I think most of his thing was really with the league and the fact that there's such a disparity between the clubs. But here's my thing, right? As a professional, you go out on the field, you get paid to perform, you get paid to beat your opponents, whether it's individual duels or whether it's scoring goals or whether it's making an assist. I really don't feel bad that we ran the score, and it could have been a lot more. I think that there's obviously a human side to this, right? After the end of the game, the Nacional players were emotional. Some of them were crying as a result of the beating, because obviously they're always going to be connected to a result like this. But nonetheless, they are professionals, right? They're in the first division, the Portuguese first division. And as a result, they should conduct themselves as such. So I am not at all bothered by the fact that Benfica scored 10. I wouldn't even be bothered if Benfica scored 15. Because this is our DNA. Our DNA is to go out and score as many goals as possible. And oftentimes here in the past couple of years, Cristiano and I always spoke about the Benfica we grew up watching. This was a Benfica that was never happy with the amount of goals that they scored. They would always go after the result. They would always try to score more. So to me, This is the harmonious world of Benfica that I want to live in and that I want to witness. Benfica just dominating these teams, dominating these smaller teams. And regardless of the scoreline, I want my team to play every single minute to beat the other team, regardless of who the other team is, regardless whether it's a second, third, fourth division team. I always want my team to be not settle. And it through the years with Rui Vitória, there was something that we always saw. The team that settled. It's a team that was defending against the Moreirenses of the world, that would score one goal and would retreat back into their half. And then we would defend the result. This is not the team that I grew up with. This is not Benfica's DNA. So if we go out and smack a team 10, 15, 7, 8, 5, this is exactly what Benfica's DNA is, and I don't oppose at all to Benfica scoring as many goals as they create opportunities for. It was too bad that we couldn't put more away, but really, this really demonstrates how dominating Benfica has been through these times that Bruno Lage has taken over. And I am not going to apologize.
And you know what? This is the same Benfica that we, if I need to remind people, that only beat Montalegre, third division team, 1-0. So, you know what? If we asked that at the beginning of the season, and we said Benfica was going to win 10-0 a game this season, and we would have probably picked that Montalegre game, but instead we beat Nacional 10-0. So no complaints, because for every 10-0 win, there's a 1-0 win against Montalegre too. So it all evens out at the end.
It was great. It was a game where they celebrated Chalena's birthday before the game. Chalena, who wore the number 10 for the longest time throughout his time at Benfica, and what's more fitting than scoring 10 goals for Chalena? We're not going to beat each team 5-6-7-0 every time. But I think it's the quality of the product that you put on the field, right? When you put that quality of a product, you expect to see results. And when you're playing well and you're playing the style of football that you're playing, the goals are going to come. So the 10-0 is completely natural for what we've seen from Benfica so far. And when you look at this roster from number 1 to number 23 or 25 and the quality that exists within this roster, we can't expect anything less than this, especially considering the opposition that we're playing. And lastly, how do you rate Benfica's chances over the course of the two legs?
Well, look, I was really impressed, especially with the first game at Alvalade. Benfica really looked like a very cohesive unit. Gabriel in the midfield looked very good. I was particularly impressed, though, with Ruben Dias and Jardel at the back, who were just impervious to Sporting's incoherent attacks. So what I'm seeing under Lage is just a very good team with very defined patterns of play, and he's getting the best out of his players. So I really believe that, given what I've seen recently from Benfica, they have a very good chance of getting through to the next round. In fact, I'd put my money on them.
Eric, always a pleasure having you, man. Thanks a lot for coming in for a few minutes and just give us a little bit about Galatasaray. It's always welcome. And obviously, you're a guy that knows his stuff, not only on Portuguese football, but also on now Turkish football, especially on Turkish football. So thank you a lot. Thanks a lot for coming in and just give us this information. Dave. Yeah, I can't begin to tell you how happy I am that Benfica has changed the way they're playing. Everything about Benfica makes me happy. I wake up with a smile on my face. I go to bed with a smile on my face. I feel good. I got a little spring on my step. You know, I'm happy. I'm happy with this Benfica. I'm happy with everything that's going on. And today we got even better news, Dave, that Bruno Lage was renewed until 2023. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm ecstatic. I hope Luis Felipe Vieira finally saw the right lights with this contract extension till 2023. So we have him for a couple of more seasons. I don't think Rui Vitória ever got this large of a contract extension with his tenure here, but the results show for it. In Lage, we trust, and everything that this guy has been touching right now is turned into gold. He's got the Midas touch, so time to reward him with an extra contract extension here.
Yeah, he does have the Midas touch indeed.
Out of nowhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cristiano Oliveira.
Whoa, what's going on, everybody? You're doing the podcast without me?
Hey, it's been like that for quite some time.
I wasn't aware. I mean, I need to get Bruno Lage's agent to work on my negotiations with you guys. You guys are not supposed to be doing podcasts without me.
Cristiano,
what's up?
Do you know how long you've been away from this podcast?
Longer than Rui Vitória has been gone from Benfica.
For sure.
But I also remember that much.
It depends, because the first time he was supposed to go, that was your last episode.
That was my last episode.
I got a couple things here, Cristiano. When you left, I'll give you, it was before the international break, round 10. Benfica was fourth, 4 points behind Porto. And we had just beaten Tondela, a team that coincidentally Porto plays this round.
This weekend.
It's been quite a bit.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute. The good news is that, you know, with my, I was going to say a bad word, but without my negative comments about Benfica and Rui Vitória and who may ever be, they've turned it around. And this is why I decided to barge in today and participate here in a podcast today, because with each passing round, my jealousy grew for you guys, because you guys were having all this fun with Bruno Lage and 10-0 victories. And here I was, you know, suffering through 1-0 victories against Valverde. What is it? What was the team we played for the Taça da Liga?
Montalegre.
It was close. I mean, nobody knows who the hell they are. But yeah, man. So I figured I'd barge in today and listen, sharing some of the fun that you guys have been having. It's been a tremendous, tremendous turnaround for Benfica. I will admit, maybe I should save some of this for you, but I'll just start answering my own thoughts, which is I will admit that I did have my reservations at first with Bruno Lage, because, you know, they didn't want to hear about all this. He knows the poots. But look, tremendous job by the guy. Yep. As much as I want to kill President Senor Luis Vieira for seeing the lights, I kind of have to be reserved a little bit in my judgment here, because he's hit this one square on the head, and it's been a fantastic hire. And I love the way the team has turned around. I love the confidence, and not just the youngsters, but the veterans. It's been really enjoyable to watch this team play the way they have. And I feel like I've gotten my Benfica back.
Let's start with perhaps the ballsiest move by Bruno Lage so far in his young tenure as Benfica coach, right? Benfica travels to Turkey. As we know, the Turkish atmosphere at Turkish stadiums is always tricky, right? There it can be intimidating. So not only is Benfica going up there and playing in those conditions, but Bruno Lage decides to put in six players made in Seychelles. 22-year-old average. 22.9.
The youngest out of all 40 teams that participate in European competition.
Average. Six players made in Seychelles.
Stop with that six. Stop. I just got on the podcast. I'm already getting a headache. Stop with the six. Because Juan Felix is a starter regardless who the hell the manager is. Druidiz is
made
a starter.
In Seychelles.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. If you want to go that way. But those guys were playing anyway.
It's a reason to be proud.
Listen, I'm praising Bruno Lage as much as anyone. But for those guys, now, to have the balls.
Florentino and Yuri.
No. To have the ball, to play Yuri and a jogo de solteiros contra os casados, that's balls. That's ballsy. And so I got to give him credit. And especially in a European game, wowzers. I mean, that was really ballsy. Look, as much as I want to praise the guy for playing everyone else and being ballsy, he must be the only one that sees the whole Yuri Ribeiro. Him and his Yuri Ribeiro's family and his girlfriend probably. Cristiano, because I don't see it.
Do you know how big Bruno Lage's balls are?
For this.
His balls are so big that his left nut was on the Asian side of Turkey and his right nut was on the European side of Turkey.
Which is a trivia question. That's a good point. Which is the only city that sits in two different continents? Istanbul. So that was relevant. Good job, Alfredo.
Thanks.
Yo, his nuts were sitting on two different continents, huh? There it is. All right, it's out.
Dave, when you saw this lineup, what was the first word that came to your mind? Putana or poutine?
Putana. When I saw Yuri, and then I saw how he played as well. But again, I don't discredit. I was never distrusting this coach.
Guys, believe me when I say this. I actually sat back and I gave the man benefit of the doubt, because everything he's touched is turned into gold, with the exception of the Porto game, where we all know that VAR decision.
That's the 3-1 result, which is the one.
The one stain that he has so far, that you could turn around and say, I don't care, which it's a stain he lost. So that's, I'm going to give those people that side of it. So fine, that's a stain. But even that game, you can make an argument as to what he did right and what he did wrong. But coming into this game in Istanbul, I said, I'm going to sit back. And a lot of people calling me and asking me, and I was like, people were shocked that I wasn't criticized. After the game, I'll comment. But let me see. Maybe this guy knows something I don't know.
Yeah.
And look, the guy, he's just... every decision he's making right now, it's coming up roses. I think the players believe in themselves. I think
they believe in him also.
That's what I'm going to say. The most important thing is that they believe in him, and he makes them believe that they're a part of the club and that they could play with anyone else. And look, it's don't discard the factor that he's trained these kids at the youth level. These guys have familiarity with this guy. I can't ever pronounce that.
Familiarity, word. Yeah, you
familiarity,
got it.
Familiarity, I still can't do it. And you know, they trust this guy because they've been with him from early on, and so you could definitely tell that on the players. And it looks like they enjoy playing foreign players are back with that chip on their shoulders. They're trying the little jugadas that they weren't trying before. It looks like the pressure's been lifted off their shoulders, and I think that they're just enjoying themselves at the moment. Right now, I don't see any reasons as to why Benfica will come crashing down to earth. I think the team is confident. I think the team is playing well. I think these little victories, and I understand some people might not prioritize the European League as much as others do, and hence, you know, and they'll point at that makeshift lineup in Istanbul, because, you know, basically telling you Benfica will prioritize the Campeonato more so than they do the Europa League. And at this point, I can't even argue with them, because I probably would do that as well. Right now, I would say.
Another tough game was Benfica's traveling up north. Always tough to play Desportivo das Aves. And
every team with the exception of Portimonense is up north. And Setúbal. Everybody else is up north.
What about Belenenses?
just like
to who knows where they are this week.
That's west, east or west.
Yeah, it's like playing Bolonense is like playing musical chairs. You never know where you're going to end up.
Because even when you see Benfica take the 3-0 lead on a goal by Ferro, scrum in the box, and the camera pans to Bruno Lage, he looks like he's having a kidney attack in the bench. He's like, he's kind of like, miserable.
He was uncomfortable.
He was not happy. It wasn't. I think he understood that the scoreline wasn't really telling the truth about the actual game. For large parts of it, you know, Avs try to dictate and try to create plays on their own. It wasn't total domination as we saw by the scoreline, as the scoreline would reflect, I should say. So, look, important 3 points, but yeah, Let's forget about it and keep it moving on, and let's get some more practices on the Bruno Lage.
They replaced him with Thiago Fernandes, 37-year-old who comes from the Sporting system, coached their juniors this season.
Do you know who his dad is?
Mr. Fernandes.
Senor Fernandes.
Do you, Dave? Bonus
no.
Point. What about you?
Is it?
Do I know who Thiago Fernandes' dad is?
Yeah.
Bruno Fernandes? I don't know, dude.
Manuel Fernandes.
Oh, the former coach. That was stupid. That was, yeah, damn.
That's
why didn't I put that to Sporting Manuel Fernandes? Yeah, my bad. Yeah,
you were close. You got Bruno Fernandes. You got the last name right, at least.
Yeah, but I remember Manuel Fernandes.
It really went quick, Cristiano. I don't know if it was because you were here, you dropped in, but it went extremely quick. I don't know how you. What about you, Dave?
I've got a question for Cristiano since he's back.
I like this.
Yes, the question on everyone's mind, especially on Twitter, are what are your thoughts about a potential Gabriel call up to the national team?
Don't get him started.
I think at this point we'll be asinine to exclude him just because he's, you know, he was born in Brazil. I think that would be irresponsible. I think he's definitely a player that if he's caliber, if he's good enough to play at the Portuguese national team and he's available for a call-up, I think he should be considered. Obviously, he's just gotten to Benfica. It's irrelevant where he played at before, what club he plays for. I don't give a crap. If a player is playing in China and he's of the caliber and he's good enough to play on the Portuguese national team, I want him called up. And he's eligible, which is most important. Is he eligible? And in this instance, he does have a Portuguese passport. His grandma is Portuguese. So, again, I'm not telling you to call him up today. But to close the door on him just because he was born in Brazil, that's asinine and that's irresponsible by anyone with any type of authority on Portuguese football. And I think, again, as I've stated on Twitter, and I'll say it again, do not close the door. Don't be an asshole just to be an asshole. Before we get to that, we're going to pull a little card here from our good friends at Benfica FM. Hugo, why don't you tell our loyal listeners, our beautiful fans, our beautiful listeners that we talk to here each week, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself? How'd you become a Benfiquista? Just, you know, give us a little bit of the
hook from you, Christian.
Yeah.
Well, how I became a Benfiquista, that's a tough one. I would imagine I was still in my dad's sack and I was already a Benfiquista. No, in all seriousness, it's part of the family. I have a great grandfather that played for the club in the 40s and 50s. And then his son, my great uncle, played on the Benfica reserves as well in the 60s during the Eusebio days and the Coluna days. Boy, is that familiar.
You know what I noticed there, Hugo? That as the generations got older, the players got worse. You know, your grandfather played, your great uncle played in the reserves, and then you didn't even play at all. I mean, yo, it just went downhill.
He plays in FIFA.
I blame my dad because he brought me to this country when I was a kid. If I was in Portugal, I would have been like a João Félix.
Hey, João Félix dos Solteiros e dos Casados.
Cristiano, I'll start with you, right? So heading into this game, how confident were you? I know that we spoke about this in the last podcast, but tell the people how confident you were.
Roll back the tape, baby, and you'll see that I was as confident as I've ever been going into the Dragão. I thought Benfica was going to find a way to come out of there with the 3 points, and that's exactly what they did. Bruno Lage has been absolutely magnificent. What he's done with this ball club here, injecting youngsters and going into very tough arenas, stadiums, whatever you want to call it, and get the 3 points. As we mentioned before, goes into Turkey, gets Benfica's first ever win in Turkey, goes into Estádio do Dragão, comes away with not just the 3 points, but the liderança and the Campeonato Português, first time in 15 match days that they regained first place again. It just, look, you got the youngest tandem ever. I mean, the youngest tandem of center backs to play a side of the loose since 19. I mean, Estádio do Dragão since 1991.
Usually you say ladrão.
I do, but you know, whatever. We won. I don't even have to call them that. They tried their best to get in there and, you know, and squeak their ways through some bogus calls. But at the end of the day, Benfica was able to tough it out. Benfica went in there and played beautifully. Beautifully, absolutely beautiful. Got a little luck, but in times like this, you do need some luck sometimes to come away with the victory. That's exactly what they did. My confidence level was as high as it's been in a very, very long time. And again, how could you not be confident after what we've seen Benfica do under Bruno Lage?
Cristiano, do you know how big João Félix's balls are?
How big?
They're so big, he could teabag Pep and Felipe at the same time. So Benfica comes out of the locker room and really hit the ground running just like they had finished the half. And it wasn't too long before Rafa found the back of the net. Cristiano, were you surprised at all that Rafa was able to find the net?
Listen, that was impressive. For a guy that we criticized so much, or I should say I criticized so much, that he couldn't score at a whorehouse with a stack of hundreds. He found a way to find the net, and it was beautiful. It was just beautiful to see the celebration. And if you guys noticed, I don't know if you caught it on TV, but the guys weren't pleased with just the 2-1 lead. They were celebrating after. Like, let's go. Vamos por mais. Look, this team was very motivated, man, and very inspired to get the 3 points and retake the lead. And it was just beautiful to watch. Rafa, phenomenal. It was just, I mentioned last week here on the podcast that he's Benfica's most dangerous player. Doesn't necessarily mean he's the best player, but he's the most dangerous player because you can't teach speed, and that always gets the other team off balance. And that's exactly what he did. He had that one chance and he put it away. Credit to him. He had another chance a couple minutes later and he shot it just wide. And that's more what we're accustomed to. But we got to praise him for that one he got on net. And, it's his 13th goal of the season. I think it's the most goals he's ever scored in his career in any single season. So this guy is finally showing everyone why Benfica paid $16 million for him, which is still till this day a transfer record between a Portuguese club to Portuguese club in the league. So phenomenal job by him and phenomenal job by everyone else. I mean, there's plenty of players that you could praise here. Samaris, a guy who I've said plenty of times that he's not necessarily caliber for, you know, to be starting 11. He had a phenomenal game. Just that one corte, that one interception or deflection, I should say, late in the second half where Herrera was behind him, where he's able to intercept, get his foot on the ball and deflect it out for a corner. That right there was worth his whole salary for the year. I thought Ferro was absolutely phenomenal, taking on the very physical play of Marega. I thought Ferro was the best player on the pitch, aside from who, in my estimation, was the best player on the field until he got a red card, and that was
Gabriel.
I thought he was man of the match. But once he gets the red card, I thought Ferro overtook that. And I think he's just, for a youngster, a guy who, look, man, Alfredo, you and I have been at this for a long time.
Yeah.
And you know very well that I don't mind eating crow, and especially when it benefits my team and I'm wrong. I love it. I love it. I love to be proven wrong, and I got to eat crow. I've said it countless times that I don't think Ferro was anything special. I didn't think Ferro could play at this level. He looks too stiff. You know, he's not athletic enough. But this guy is just, he's been phenomenal. I mean, the guy is a lot better with the ball at his feet than I ever anticipated. He's very physical. He's fast. There's nothing that this guy can't do. Yep. And then you pair him alongside Ruben Dias, who I thought Ruben Dias was better. Ruben Dias still, to me, is quicker and
brute.
A little bit more. Yeah, I was going to say more aggressive. He doesn't have the feet. Ferro's just, this guy has been a pleasant surprise along with Florentino, along with all these kids who are coming up from the B team. But in this game, you have to tip your cap to who had phenomenal games. Almeidinhos, he had a good game as well. You have to, you know, praise the guy. But,
yeah,
Ferro to me was the one that stood out the most. Very, very different styles. Benfica tries to play out the back, tries building up play, tries to get lanes involved, get, you know, different sectors of the game where Porto is very direct. Porto gets the ball and it's up to Marega and tries to get Marega hold up play and get his teammates on, and then he lays it off. It's a very different style of playing. And unfortunately for Porto and unfortunately for Benfica, they weren't able to overpower Benfica with that physicality because the likes of Ferro and Ruben Dias, they could stay step for step with the Marega, even though I'll say Marega, his teammates are like they were in third gear. My man was in seventh. I mean, Marega, dude, for a guy who hasn't played in 2 months, was the guy fit?
That horse placenta did wonders. Big, big, huge 3 points for Benfica that allow us to leapfrog Porto and in the table. Cristiano, we spoke about what kind of mental edge this would give either team if the result were to go this way. How are you feeling about that? How do you feel this leaves both Porto and leaves Benfica? How do you what kind of mental state do you think this result leaves each team in?
I think Benfica right now is in cloud nine. I think, you know, obviously the toughest game of the season for them is going into the Dragão and at any time, any season, and they were able to go in there and play very good football when they had 11 guys. Obviously, I had to defend and backtrack a lot when they were down to 10. But Benfica was able to impose their football, was able to do whatever the hell it was that they wanted to do. And I think right now they're sky high. I think you know, only themselves could trip themselves up. I don't think it's going to be any team in the Portuguese league that's going to be able to do it unless they themselves don't perform to the level that they're expected to perform. Porto on the other side, it's devastating. Obviously, you lose both games of the season to Benfica in a Campeonato, I should say. They lose both games. And, you know, it's never pleasant to lose and then give up the leadership of the Campeonato. But that being said, look, let's be realistic about things. I think Porto now falls 2 points behind Benfica, and they'll be ready to pounce on any slip-up that Benfica has. And I don't think it's the end of the Campeonato, as a lot of people are saying. There's still 10 games to be played. And I think Sergio Conceição and the Portistas and directors are telling their players exactly that, and to be ready and play their best football. I know they must have lost some confidence because of this performance. But again, there's plenty of season to be had, and you know, anything that can help them on the sidelines will be on their side. And I think that it's up to Benfica now. It's really up to Benfica now, because if they don't win the Campeonato, it'll just be three meaningless points at the Dragão. I think they absolutely have to come out, play their best football. I think Bruno Lage will have these guys ready with rotations and motivation, because obviously anyone could play at any moment on this roster. So look, different ends of the spectrum, but I still think that the mentality on both sides still gunning for that first place.
I think the biggest key to Lage is that he has 25 players who believe in him and his system. Whereas in years past, well, let's reflect on early on in the season. I mean, Rui Vitória's lineups were 13, 14 guys, no more than that. There was no rotation, not even in League Cup games. So that's the biggest element that I believe Bruno Lage brought. You look at the resurrection of Samaris, for example, which is a player that I love. You look at João Félix, who's now João Félix mais 10 every lineup. Even Florentino coming in. I mean, the kid looks like a stud. Obviously, Fer, to me, is going to be a player that we're going to speak about for a long time. I hope it's in a Benfica jersey, but obviously that's probably not realistic. And then even André Almeida looks like a different player, to be completely honest. And obviously Sferovic is dangerous in scoring goals. So I believe that's what Lage brought, is that element of locker room unity, the element of every player is important, and he proves it. And I think he's going to prove it again on Thursday, because I think he's going to rotate some members of the squad for Thursday's game.
9 recuperated points since Lage took over, a different attitude. But there's a lot more here. You have a bunch of stats here. From Benfica hadn't beaten Port in both stages of the Campeonato since 2005-2006. What else?
They also hadn't beaten Porto and Sporting away in the same season since 1990-91. Some comparison, Bruno Lage against Porto and Sporting, 3 wins, 1 loss in 4 games. And it took Rui Vitória to get 3 wins. It took him 16 games. So he had 3 wins, 7 draws, and 6 losses. So
look, 3 points are important, but the way Benfica was able to impose their football and the way Benfica have played under Bruno Lage, that's what I'm most confident about. You know what I mean? They could have came away with a draw and I still would have been confident had they played the same way. It's the way that the attitude, it's the way that they're playing. I mean, this is not a guy that is scared to attack. You saw Benfica's down to 10 men and he doesn't all of a sudden start throwing in defensive minded players. He makes like for like substitutions. And it's like, you start asking yourself, like, what are you doing? Florentino's a defensive player and you're still on the side. And he's ignoring that. He's ignoring what we've been grown, you know, what we've grown to see or so accustomed to see at Benfica. And he's going against the grain, and it's been absolutely beautiful to see. So I think, yes, I'm staying very low key, but I'm very excited deep down inside at the way that this club's playing football.
I mean, they've been doing pretty good.
Yeah. whatever. Enough about Blumens. Benfica's playing at home. They just beat Porto on the road. If you want to be taken seriously, they have to win this game at home. And I'm ultra confident because it is at the start of the lose. They don't have to play on that potato field that they played against whatever the hell it was. It was Lama everywhere. I think it was Stubble, if I'm not mistaken. Stade de Nocina. Playing that Stade de Luz behind their 55,000+ fans. I think Benfica will be motivated, especially after this huge win at the Ladrão. It'll be exciting times. Benfica's going to score 4 or 5 and come over with 3 points and just run right over them.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for checking us out. We will be back next week. Next week we'll recap both the Zagreb and the Bolonense game. We'll look ahead to the second half of the second leg of the Zagreb and whatever Benfica has coming up next weekend. So thank you so much, and talk to you again next week.
Arrivederci.
Later.